Hello, this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is Bill Payne.
Better beware, cause I'm back in town. Driving my Chevy with the rag top down. We were one, I don't know. All shook up and ready to go. Rag top, what do I do? I'm in my house, kind of blue. Been out chasing that low white line. Rolling down the mountain on Highway 9. Out in the wide world, what am I? Riding my Chevy with the rag top down. Rag top down. Set 'em up, ladies, I'm coming to town. Driving my Chevy with the rag top down. All the ladies flashing, smiling too. Like sweet mama, that's all they do. Rag top, Highway 9. Santa Cruz to the county line. It's San Jose with the twist of line. Wind in my hair. San Jose is a low-riding town. No place to ride with the rag top down. Kick the engine into cruise control. Rolling up the ramp to San Francisco. 101 is the road to ride. Run out of gas, pull to the side. Stick out my thumb, but no one stops. Keeping the knife in enough to pull me in on charges. Redwood City, shoulder my back. Siphon some gas, take a taxi back. Rag top, what do I do? Baby, I'm so in love with you. Say you'll take me back sometime. Head back home. Type of town to drive my Chevy with the rag top down. I cruise around until it's dark. Still can't find no place to park. Rag top, what do I do? Turn my ass round home to you. Beg your pardon on bending knees. Take the pledge, hand over my keys.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is pianist and keyboardist Bill Payne, one of the founding members of the band Little Feet. We caught up with Bill backstage at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula. before a performance in May of 2013. I'm very pleased to be speaking today, and welcome to the show today, Bill Payne. How are you doing?
Hey, great, John. Thank you.
Great to have you on the show and get a chance to talk shop with you. Our listeners will, of course, be familiar with Bill from his work with the iconic rock band Little Feat. But in addition to that, and being one of the founding members of that group, I started to look down the list and I started to get dizzy of all the musicians that you have worked with. But we'll toss out some names. The Doobie Brothers, Emmylou Harris, Pink Floyd, Bob Seger, Linda Ronstadt, Jackson Browne, Stevie Nicks, Bonnie Raitt, Beck. A stellar list of artists, to put it mildly. Before I start with the interview, I want to let listeners know we're talking to Bill today backstage at the Top Hat. Where I wanted to start, Bill, was your connection with Montana, because I know that you're very connected to Montana these days.
I am. I bought a place in the Paradise Valley in 1980. I live here year-round now for about 3 years. I mean, I actually came to Montana because I'd never, ever toured here. I thought, I wonder what it's like. And when I came in through Yellowstone Park into Gardner and just up the road a little bit, even just that little brief interlude, I went, I got to check this out. Mm.
Well, we're very pleased to have you as part of the Montana musical community and have you be a part of things. And of course, you're working with the Hooligans and working on a project with them. Before we get into talking about that, though, mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about your introduction to your instrument.
Sure. I started around the age of five taking lessons for piano. There was a little girl across the street in Ventura, California, that was taking piano lessons, and I thought, well, God, if she's doing it, I want to do it. And the teacher we wound up choosing, my mother and I, was Ruth Newman. And Ruth listened to a song I played for Davy Crockett, the theme from Davy Crockett. She says, hey, when you come back in a couple weeks, or a week, whenever it was, I'll have this written out for you and you can see what you actually played. The beauty of studying piano with Ruth, which I did from age 5 through 15, she told my mother, she says, look, I'll make sure Bill knows how to read music, but let's not take the magic out of it for him. Mm-hmm. I learned to get around a keyboard pretty well. It's a part of my conversation as well of just who I am as a human being and particularly as a musician.
Am I correct that even before you got into formal lessons, you were plunking out tunes with your mom?
Yeah.
She was showing you some tunes?
She showed me a song called Vaya con Dios. On the cover of this music, it was really kind of almost a royal blue cover. It had a photo of Les Paul and Mary Ford. And I didn't have a clue who Les Paul was, or Mary Ford either. But I was intrigued by the photo of the two of them. And, I was in the basement. It was kind of a little on the cold side. It was a little scary for a 4.5-year-old. And I'm in the warmth of my mother's arms. She's playing this piano. It's an upright. I can still see the coloration of the keys, some of the chips on the keys. And that brought an inviting environment to me as far as an instrument. Mm-hmm. The piano is my refuge.
Yeah.
Keyboards are my refuge.
Thank you. Bill, we would be remiss in not discussing Little Feat, of course. And sure. As a stepping off point for that, what came to my mind was, you know, as I woke up this morning and thought, okay, I'm going to talk with Bill Payne today. And what came to my mind was that iconic motif, to use a classical term, in Dixie Chicken. And I was thinking, that's got to be one of the, I don't know, top three piano motifs in rock music history, easily. Mm. And so I guess where I wanted to start was maybe just talking about, do you remember the first time you came up with that so memorable motif at the start of that song?
Well, there was a record of Howlin' Wolf's, and it was How Many More Years, I believe, and written by Willie Dixon, who I also had the pleasure of working with. And on that record, he went, ba-ba-boom, ba-ba-boom. He did the Ray 7th. And I thought, man, that's a cool tone. So when I sat down to play this, instead of da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I raised it up a half step. That's where the lick came from. It didn't sound anything, by the way, like on the Willie Dixon tune or that. But it was that voicing that caught my ear. And I went, oh my gosh, what's that? Let me see if I can put that someplace. Mm.
It just seems like such a great thing to have, such an iconic lick on such an iconic tune that has reached so many people. You know, and the band's music. I mean, we could just go on and on and on with questions and discussions and stories about Little Feat. I guess where are you with Little Feat now, just in terms of its history and you know, where it's sitting with you as a musician?
Well, John, that's a great, great question. This thing is a lot bigger than any of us anymore. We have this family that includes Lowell George. It includes his daughter, Inara George. There's a space capsule out in outer space that NASA put out into the universe. It's got Little Feat and Inara on there singing. She's singing the song Trouble, which is not the same version that we did on an album about 2-3 records ago. It's a different version. Mm-hmm. So we're literally in the stars. It's bigger than us.
Bill, it strikes me, meeting you and getting a chance to talk with you and also preparing for this interview, that you know, you seem like a very grounded guy, very grounded man. And one of the things that came to my mind was in the last year, I think it was about 6-7 months ago or so, I had a chance to have Chris Hillman on the show. And for some reason, I'm drawing a parallel to the two of you, you know, obviously both musicians, both members of iconic and founding members of iconic groups.
Yeah.
and both of whom who have experienced, you know, the loss of a friend and fellow band member, you know, in his case, Graham Parsons,
right.
In your case, Lowell George, that both of whom sort of lived the myth of rock and roll and all its excesses and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here you, the two of you are surviving and have been grounded and still making music.
Well, when I first met Lowell, summer of 69, which I called the summer of love, murder, and men on the moon, I got to his house at the prescribed time, and there was a little, the door was open. It was up in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles, a rustic home set just off the street, surrounded by these beautiful trees. And I walked up to the door, which is open. There's a little blonde girl sitting in the middle of the floor, listening to some Eric Satie. And she goes, "Come on in. Lowell will be back in 4 hours. He's expecting you." And I said, "Well, what does he do when he's not expecting you?"
Oh, wow.
So I walked into the place, visited with her for a little bit. Then I thought, "Well, I'm here for a while. Let me check out and see what's there." So there's a Japanese samurai sword on the back wall in the right-hand corner facing the backyard. There was a sitar. I learned later that he'd been taking sitar lessons from Ravi Shankar.
Wow.
When Lowell finally showed up and we met, it was like the description I've heard of Castro and Che Guevara meeting the first time. They talked about everything under the sun. They were capable of it first and foremost, but that's the line that brought them together. And I felt that way with Lowell. I mean, you could be discussing cooking or politics or what's the schools or any type of music. I mean, it was just like, we were right there. It was fascinating. The broader question to what you're asking, I just wanted to let you know what was the anchor to our meeting. The boat, the anchor, the pier, we began to set adrift because of the drugs that everybody, including myself, were into in the late 60s, early 70s. Lowell's a very smart, complicated man. He was my mentor, and we, at times, really didn't get along at all. I didn't like the idea of 2 steps forward, 5 steps backward, 1 step ahead. I mean, it was just like, man, can we just keep her on the track, or keep her on the trail for a little bit? I look at it as Lowell being a part of our family, as I said earlier. And that this thing was a lot bigger than all of us. And you say she was the prettiest girl you've ever seen, with her feathers and her smile. She might be the girl who would hold stone cold hearts so dear. But if I knew the way out of this place, I would take you by the arm and lead you out of here, where your lover is waiting. Though her bed might not be empty, this I must admit, I do not know. Or even the way out of this place, or even the way back home. By the by, I think strangest person I know.
by the hour and lead you out of here, where your lover is waiting. Although her bed might not be empty, this I must admit I do not know. Even the way out of this place, or even the way back home. By the by the by the by, I think you are the strangest person I know. Strangest person to know.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musician Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Bill Payne. Bill, I wanted to ask you about a quote. I think, again, I saw this on your website. I don't separate myself from my art. I want to ask if you could expound on that a little bit.
Well, I guess what I meant was, it's been such an ingrained part of who I am for so long. It's hard for me to step outside of it and go, oh, I do this because I'm going to a baseball game. If the guy's playing the organ at the game, I'm going to be listening to what key he's playing in, what the tempo is. If I'm watching the pitcher pitch a ball, what tempo is he? What is the cadence of the pitch that this guy is using? But the idea of being an artist, it's like I said, it's being inquisitive. It's really the simplest way I can put it. So that if I'm making chocolate chip cookies, do I want to make them to where they're a little flat? Or do I want to put in a little more flour to where they'll raise up just a little bit? Mm-hmm. Do I want to use Ghirardelli chocolate chips, sweet butter as opposed to butter with salt in it? I mean, it's. I think this comes from playing 3 and 4-bar fugues growing up, too. You want to get into the kerf of something? Then let's go, because I'm more than capable of doing that. Mm-hmm. I don't like doing it because it drives people crazy. And probably drove Lowell a little nuts. But it's ingrained in who I am. It took me a long, long time, John, to sort of get to the point where I could look at myself. And, I mean, I realized, okay, I've had a career. I mean, you have the Rolling Stones sitting there watching you from the side of the stage in 1975. That says something. When Bob Dylan walks up to you and goes, hey, Billy, you remember The Bottom Line? And you go, I'm going, well, how does Bob know my name? And I go, yeah, Bob, I remember about 34 years ago or at the time that it happened, and you scared the hell out of me. So at some point you begin to think, well, yeah, I'm this, but I'm also the same guy that was called to play piano at a recital, or not a recital, but at an assembly in Ventura at age 4th, 5th grade. And I don't know what I'm going to play. And I get a standing ovation walking up to the keyboard. I play a little Chinese song. And I walk back to my seat, standing ovation, and I go out in the playground and get beat up like everybody else.
You got a place down Kentucky, right down near Ohio. You can watch them playing at night. The people lined up to watch his fight. Said, watching them play, yeah. I wish I was home. I sit here thinking about a crazy little girl if I could only see her tonight. Oh, Atlanta. Oh, Atlanta. Oh, Atlanta. I got to get back to you. Thank you. drop me off on Peachtree. I got to feel that Georgia's unhurt. The women down in the Atlanta, boys, make a hope that daddy's only pump and run. I said I'm watching them play ace. I wish I was home. Sitting here thinking, not that crazy little girl if I could. Oh, Atlanta. Oh, 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 Atlanta. Hey, hey, Atlanta. I got to get back.
I want to mention a couple of different websites to our listeners in terms of where they can go to check out more of what you're doing. One is, of course, littlefeet.net, which is the band's website, but also billpaynecreative.com. And I'll just make sure folks know that your last name is spelled P-A-Y-N-E, billpaynecreative.com. And that's a real nice site that's got a number of things for folks to check out, not just tour dates and stuff, but just some of your writings. And
yeah, some of the writings. There's photography. My photography is there. And yeah, it's all part of this creative journey. I've I guess more or less wound up accepting. I didn't do my first solo shows, John, till last year, age 63.
Really?
Believe it or not. So playing with James Taylor or Ronstadt or Emmy Lou, or I've got Emmy Lou Harris's piano at my house. It just goes on and on. I mean, it's but playing with the Hooligans, who are not a nationally known group, or it's great musicians. It's people that are of a band. I like people that like music and that like exploring those avenues, and feel privileged to be able to work with folks like that.
Bill, thanks so much for making time to be on the show with us, and knowing that you're just down the road by Montana standards, just down the road a little bit, hopefully we'll get a chance to visit again.
It'd be a pleasure, John. Thanks so much for having me this time.
Well, the music it plays all night. They got this boogie band going.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been Bill Payne. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also find us online at our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as on Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as from iTunes. Special thanks today to the Top Hat Lounge for this interview. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.